Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Today is the NBA trade deadline. It comes down right at 3 o'clock Eastern. So we have got, let me do the math, live math on the air is always a disaster. Right at 9 hours, if I'm not mistaken, right at 9 hours until the trade deadline is officially here as we start off at 6 a.m. Eastern on the Thursday show. And people in the NBA are starting to come undone, particularly the players. We got a couple of different audios of you that I'm going to play, but I got a theory for you off the top here. We're going to talk to Chris Mannix, covers the NBA. He's going to be on with us next segment, and I'll hit him with some of these theories. I got a theory for you. I think the New Orleans Pelicans were so upset by the way that Anthony Davis handled his impending free agency that they decided, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to blow up the Lakers franchise this year. And do you know how they decided to do it? By doing absolutely nothing at all. Because everything that Anthony Davis and Rich Paul and LeBron James tried to manufacture was about Anthony Davis forcing a trade to the Lakers this year. Rich Paul and LeBron James thought they were chess grandmasters. And they thought by going public with this Anthony Davis demand, it would put so much pressure on the Pelicans that it would force the Pelicans to deal Anthony Davis. And do you know what's happened instead? The Pelicans basically laughed at him, engaged in negotiations that only went one way, with the Lakers obsessively offering basically every player on their roster in exchange for Anthony Davis. And then they just cut off all contact. Reports are the Pelicans haven't responded to the Lakers in multiple days now. And if you watched the Pacers beat the Lakers by 42 points, you tell me that in the process the Lakers haven't blown up their entire season. Because if they're unable to make any big deal, and it looks like that is probably likely with about 9 hours to go till the trade deadline, it's 3 a.m. on the West Coast right now, and the Lakers have been unable to do anything to grab Anthony Davis. Meanwhile, the Pelicans are saying, so what? We'll just wait until the end of the year, and then if we decide to trade Anthony Davis, we'll be able to talk with every single team in the NBA, and we're not going to allow LeBron James and Rich Paul to dictate to us what we should be doing. And as a result, instead of making his team better, I think there's a strong argument that LeBron James has blown up the Lakers. I really do. I think it's very hard to go back into the locker room and argue, hey, you guys should listen to me and believe in me if you're LeBron James, when you know that entire roster was basically on the chopping block and LeBron was doing everything he could to get rid of everybody. It's hard to trust LeBron James after that. And most relationships, especially in sports, are founded on trust. I think LeBron James has fundamentally lost the trust of his teammates in the Lakers locker room. And LeBron now is kind of like gone off on this strange soliloquy where he got on Instagram all up in his feelings and it doesn't make any sense what he was saying. Did you see all the LeBron quotes that he put out there? This was a lead headline, and now I see that it's vanished. But LeBron got on the Instagram machine, and he decided to tweet all about the trade of Harrison Barnes last night that took place while the game was actually going on. And the LeBron Instagram post, which I'm going to read to you, basically. Had to do with the fact that players, somebody send me that link right now. I want to read that LeBron, the LeBron Instagram post. But first, everybody's kind of coming undone as the NBA trade deadline gets closer and closer. And in particular, here's the challenge. The NBA itself on the court doesn't provide any real drama because the Warriors are by far the best team in the league. And as a result, all of the media is forced to cover all of the free agent and trade news because that's what the fans actually care about. And so now Kevin Durant is mad about speculation that he might go join the Knicks. And in a pretty extraordinary post-game press conference, he went off on the media for speculating about where he might go. If you haven't heard this, it happened late last night after the Warriors beat the Spurs pretty soundly. Kevin Durant hadn't talked to the media for a couple of days. Here's what he had to say.
You've obviously been around the noise for so long. Is it bothering you more this year? Is it louder this year?
It's unnecessary. You got to do Ethan Strauss who come in here and just give his whole opinion on stuff and make it seem like it's coming from me. And he just walk around here, don't talk to nobody, just walk in here and survey and then write something like that. And now y'all piling on me because I don't want to talk to y'all about that. I have nothing to do with the Knicks. I don't know who traded Porzingis. They got nothing to do with me. I'm trying to play basketball. Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches. You rile up the fans about it. Y'all let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man. Grow up. Come on, bro. I come in here and go to work every day. I don't cause no problems. I play the right way. Well, I try to play the right way. I try to be the best player I can be every possession. What's the problem? What am I doing to y'all?
We're talking to the media.
So? Who are you? Why do I got to talk to you? Tell me. Is that going to help me do my job better? Nah, bro. I didn't feel like talking.
In all honesty, the players have created this situation in the NBA. And now they're upset that the media is following this situation in the NBA. It's much more interesting to the average NBA fan whether Kevin Durant is going to leave and join the Knicks than it is talking about the Warriors winning their third championship in 4 years because they have a super team. It's much more interesting for Laker fans, I think, to talk about who might be joining the team than it is to talk about this year's team. The NBA has traded on-court drama for off-court drama. And the players can't then get upset when the media is following the narrative that they have already set. LeBron James last night on Instagram, as Harrison Barnes was traded to Sacramento for Justin Jackson and Zach Randolph while the game was going on, he took to Instagram and said, "So let me guess, this is cool because they had to do what was best for the franchise, right? Traded this man while he was literally playing in the game and had zero idea. I'm not knocking who traded him because it's a business and you have to do what you feel what's best. But I just want this narrative to start to get real change, all caps, and not when a player wants to be traded or leaves a franchise that he's a selfish, ungrateful player. But when they trade you, release, waive, cut, etc., it's best for them. I'm okay with both, honestly, truly am. Just call a spade." Well, these aren't similar situations, LeBron. And I don't know if LeBron doesn't see this or if he's been intentionally daft here. And by the way, Anthony Davis liked this Instagram post. When a team trades a player or releases him or cuts him, it's about the team trying to get better. If you are a fan of that team, you might not agree with that move, but you know that your executive has the same goal that you do, i.e., they want that team to become better. When a player like Anthony Davis says, "Trade me, I don't want to be here anymore," Anthony Davis is making the team that you care about worse. So those aren't a spade, LeBron James. Those are completely different situations. Now, I don't begrudge a player for deciding to do what he thinks is better than him, or better for him, I should say. But it isn't the same, and you shouldn't expect fans to react the same way. Because the team trading for a player or trading away a player or cutting or releasing him is about the team trying to get better. and fans root for teams. A player saying, I don't want to play for your team anymore, is not the same. Now, a player can make a business decision like a team can make a business decision. That's fine. But don't expect fans to react to those in the same way, because the fan is rooting most of the time for the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back of the jersey. A player has to take care of the name on the back of the jersey more than he does the name on the front of the jersey. Those are not similar situations. But I do find this amazing that the two best players probably in the NBA, Durant and LeBron, are both starting to crack under the pressure of the situation that they have created. They created the idea that what matters in the NBA isn't what happens during the season, it's the drama that happens off the court during the offseason. LeBron created this situation with Decision 1, Decision 2, and Decision 3.0. Kevin Durant created the speculation that he might go to the Knicks by the decision that he made in his Decision 1.0 when he went to the Warriors. Players jumping all over and across the country when they become unrestricted free agents is a huge topic that the media wants to care about. Think about it. If you're a Warriors fan right now, do you care what Kevin Durant has to say about the game they just won against the Spurs? Or do you care whether or not he might be interested in going to New York, and that's why they're trading all of those players at the end of the season? It's not even close. You can't blame the media for covering what fans want to hear and talk about, and you certainly can't blame the media when you are the one who helped to create this situation. The NBA free agency is, frankly, a lot more interesting than the NBA regular season right now. So I don't know how you blame the NBA media for covering something that you created.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Chris Mannix joins us now, does a great job covering the NBA. Chris, what's going to happen? Your best prediction between now and trade deadline hitting at 3 Eastern?
Well, I still think there's a handful of significant deals that could get done. Ultimately, I think Memphis is going to auction off Mike Conley. A Marc Gasol deal gets done. They've made it pretty clear that they want to kind of reboot this whole thing. So they're going to move off both those guys. An interesting team I'm watching is Orlando. They're another team that, outside of Mo Bamba and Jonathan Isaac, two of their young players, they've made it pretty clear everybody else is available, and there's some pretty good talent on that roster. And I guess the non-Anthony Davis division, it's kind of what's Philadelphia going to do with Markelle Fultz? You're not going to get dollar for dollar value back from Fultz. You're not going to get a draft pick that's commensurate with what Fultz was, but you may be able to get a rotation player who can help you in the playoffs. And you know, the way the Sixers team is kind of being built right now, that could be a pretty valuable asset to them.
Did or have the Pelicans intentionally blown up the Lakers' pursuit of Anthony Davis to blow up their team in the process? Because if you've seen the team chemistry with the Lakers right now, it certainly kind of feels that way. Do you think that was intentional?
I don't know if it was intentional the way it all kind of shook out. I've said, Clay, for days, I didn't think the Pelicans had any intention of trading Anthony Davis, at least not before the trade deadline. I mean, there are legitimate reasons for not doing it. You know, the draft lottery being unknown and who has that number one pick. More importantly, Boston's ability to get into the mix and make a deal that is more significant than what anybody could do. And look, this is going to be and should be the most substantial trade in NBA history. You should get back the most assets for you, and it's a chance to rebuild your entire franchise on the fly. But I do think there was a more personal aspect to it. And look, I was talking to somebody in New Orleans last night. I don't know that they necessarily blame the Lakers, but they do blame Rich Paul, and they they know that this season was probably going to be Davis's last season. Like they expected that come July, Davis would reject their contract extension, and they'd have kind of what San Antonio had, a few weeks to piece deals together and make one. This trade request, the public trade-ness of the trade request, and the obviousness that this was connected to a desperation to get him to the Lakers, that really rattled, you know, people in influential positions in that front office. So, I don't know if it's a Laker-centric thing as much as it has to do with Davis's representatives and how they've chafed the Pelicans front office.
Do Rich Paul and LeBron James think they're playing chess, and in reality they're actually playing checkers? Because to me, their entire movements here have been conducted as if they think they're moving from a position of power, and the reality is they don't have that much power, and I think this entire process has blown up on them. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree, because you know, unless something changes dramatically in the next 7 or 8 hours, you know, Davis is going to be on the Pelicans, and it's going to be an incredibly uncomfortable few months for him as he tries to play, and the Pelicans sort of decide what to do with him. The fan support obviously just vanished. And if you know anything about Anthony Davis, it's the last thing he wants. Like, you know, he up until this point, he not only has not made any public trade request, he hasn't even grumbled. Like, there hasn't even been this kind of sourced reporting of Davis's unhappiness. And this was a strategic play on the part of his representatives that I think, and I'm just sort of speculating here, but I think he was talked into. And here we are, where, you know, it all kind of fell flat. And if we've learned anything over the last few years, you know, a player with 1 year left in their contract can force a trade, but he can't force where he's going to get traded to. So, you know, just like Kawhi went to Toronto and Paul George went to Oklahoma City, there's a realistic chance that even if it's not Boston, it's somewhere else that Davis winds up. And then he's going to have to make a decision. Do you go to Los Angeles with a 36-year-old LeBron James and play alongside him in 2020? And that could be an even tougher call.
Yeah, and that's what I've been saying from the get-go, Chris. I'm surprised more people in media haven't pointed this out. I understand completely why LeBron wants Anthony Davis. I don't understand at all why Anthony Davis wants LeBron.
Yeah, look, it's a very fair point. And it makes even less sense when, you know, look, you and I both know what public statements don't always mean everything. What a guy says publicly and privately are oftentimes two very different things. But the trade demand, you know, his agent's statement said he wants to go somewhere where he can consistently win and be on a championship contender. His media gaggle after the trade request, he said, it's my time, I want to win, all these kind of things. In what world, like just putting the Celtics and Lakers on the table, no one can legitimately say that a trade to Boston is not better than a trade to Los Angeles. It's just not. I mean, we can quibble about, you know, what's the deal with Kyrie Irving. I don't think anybody really knows out there. But the Celtics are pretty well stacked right now. And the Lakers, if they make this Anthony Davis trade, it's Anthony Davis, you know, 35-year-old LeBron James, and God knows who else.
And I think that's so well said. We're talking to Chris Mannix. So what if this – LeBron James said yesterday everybody needs to stay off social media during the trade deadline. You know, these young guys, they spend too much time there. And then what does LeBron do? He gets on social media and sends out a Instagram post that doesn't really make any sense, but I guess he thinks it does, about Harrison Barnes getting traded. How does LeBron right now, so with the Lakers sitting at 27-27 and likely to lose their next two, frankly, against the Celtics and the 76ers, rebuild this team? It feels like to me like the Lakers have pretty much blown up in his face if they aren't able to make a trade, and it doesn't seem like they're going to be, because why would these guys ever trust him?
Oh, and can you imagine? I mean, I'll be at the game in Boston tonight, and you know, Celtic fans who will declare victory that Davis didn't get traded. Like, that'll be their victory, and they'll declare it a Lakers loss with all the animosity that exists between Boston and LA to begin with. That the Pacers fans set the blueprint, and I think the Celtics fans will take it to, like, the extreme level with some of the chants they're going to make when, you know, guys like Ingram and Kuzma and whoever are at the free throw line. Here's the problem that LeBron is going to encounter, and I talked to someone close to that team about this just the other night. You know, the young players on that team, they're going to look at LeBron as the guy, because LeBron's agent, and look, you can't, it's reasonable to assume that LeBron's agent and Anthony Davis' agent, that they had this discussion with LeBron James. It's reasonable to assume that you can say that LeBron comes in, talks about, you know, playing with these young guys, and within, you know, a half a season is basically orchestrating their trade out of town. Now, you can say LeBron doesn't know who the Lakers are going to trade. He certainly knows that to get Anthony Davis, it's going to take every viable young talent on that roster. So Ingram, Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, who we already saw do the goofy thing of take all his Lakers stuff off his social media, and LeVar has miraculously resurfaced in the last week. Like, these guys can't
LeVar,
be happy
by the way,
with the idea.
Is going to be on Undisputed with Skip Bayless this morning.
Here we go.
So what's going to happen
here,
there.
Here it comes. Like, you know, I tell you this much, and I talked to a GM about this during the week. It reminds people that if you're trading for Lonzo Ball, you get the LeVar Ball experience too. And everybody knows how distracting he was in the first half of last season.
All right, we're talking to Chris Mannix. Kevin Durant goes off on the media last night in Golden State after their win over the Spurs. But haven't LeBron James and Kevin Durant created this situation in the NBA where there is no drama right now on the court, right? I think everybody would be stunned if the Warriors don't win the championship again. And so as a result, all of the drama comes off the court. When you do the decision like LeBron did, 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, and when Kevin Durant made the decision already 1.0 to leave OKC like he did, they have created this system whereby the players' off-the-court decisions are a lot more interesting in the NBA than the on-court product. And therefore, I think it's hypocritical of them to suddenly say to the media, why are you guys covering this so much? Well, because you created this, you made it fertile. There is no franchise tag, like in the NFL, which would restrict player movement. This story is by far more interesting than who's going to win the championship, which is how most other sports are covered.
Absolutely. And I think more importantly, LeBron and Kevin Durant have created this by, you know, bucking the system and only signing short-term deals.
Yeah.
You know, if Kevin Durant was under a four-year deal, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We're not having any conversation about LeBron's future because he signed a four-year deal. There are plenty of advantages to signing short-term contracts. The power you gain within an organization by signing a short-term contract is significant. But this is the fallout. Like, this is what you get. When a team like the Knicks, which, you know, God help them if they did this without any kind of head nod from Kevin Durant. I mean, they've been the gang that can't shoot straight for the better part of the last two decades. If they did it again, you know, there should be a storming of the garden. But this, they're doing this. They're doing this because they believe that they're going to get Kevin Durant. And because Kevin Durant keeps signing these one-year deals, this is what happened. So it's you can't have what the good that comes with the short-term deal and the bad, and you can avoid all the bad.
Outstanding stuff as always. What's your? I always like this from a process point because I think there's a lot of people out there driving into school and work. They think, oh, I'd like to work in sports media someday. What will today be like for you, and what has the past several days been like for you as a guy covering the NBA? How many hours a day are you working right now?
It's most of them.
That's such a good answer. Just, how many hours are you working? It's most of them.
It's hard to keep track half the time. I mean, the Tobias Harris trade kind of, I've never experienced that, where it's 2 a.m. and a major deal goes down on the East Coast. But it's a lot of texting, and guys don't want to be bothered most of the time with phone calls. I will say this, though. There's a lot of people that are grumbling nowadays, especially involved with the Lakers. As you know, the last few years, they've really pissed some teams off. Like, it's, you know, Kawhi wants to go, and it wasn't a lot of the Lakers necessarily, but they were part of it. That's Paul George. And now here we have Anthony Davis. Like, there are teams out there with GMs that feel like they've built their teams the right way. They've done it through the draft. They've done it through shrewd maneuvering. And then they see the Lakers out there who are just, like, dangling, like, Manhattan Beach and saying, like, come play for us because, you know, you might like our lifestyle better. That you'd be surprised how many teams that really annoys going into days like this.
Do you think it's possible the Clippers, by the way, have outplayed the Lakers quietly in free agency and getting ready for the offseason?
100%. I think I don't know how successful they're going to be, but they are in a much better position. Yes, the Lakers have LeBron James, but the Clippers got two first-round draft picks for a guy they weren't going to re-sign anyway. And it takes them out of the playoff mix, but they get to keep their draft pick if they're out of the playoff mix. Otherwise, it transfers over to Boston. They've done a very good job in Los Angeles in organizationally preparing for free agency.
Last question for you. I know how busy you are. I appreciate you coming on with us. Chris Mannix, he kills it. Go follow him on Twitter. Lakers, let's say, don't make a move here. what can they do in the offseason to make themselves substantially better by next year? Because I'm starting to look at it and say, okay, if Durant's going to go to New York, like, who is the – what is the addition that's going to make the Lakers infinitely better? Who are they going to be in the running for if Anthony Davis ultimately doesn't come there? Who's the guy? What changes?
I don't know that there is one, Clay, to be honest with you. You know, when you canvass the league at the top free agent level, I haven't really encountered anybody – and I'm trying to think, yeah, I haven't encountered anybody that says put the Lakers as their top choice or that lists the Lakers high up there. I mean, you know, the Clippers have been all in on Kawhi from jump. Like, yeah, that's the guy that they're going after. Jimmy Butler, he's going to go where the money is, but I don't know that it's going to be in Los Angeles. Kemba Walker, I don't think that's happening either. You know, Durant is not going to play with LeBron James. Like, if for no other reason, he's trying to chase championships and eclipse LeBron James. I think they're in trouble. I really do. I don't think there's a guy out there that could be make a significant difference for them that next season.
Outstanding stuff as always. Get some sleep in a couple of days, but until then, 9 more hours. Kill it, my man.
You got it, Clay.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Kevin Durant also went off on the media, if you're just waking up on the West Coast, after the win over the Spurs last night. I want to play this audio for you. Kevin Durant coming a little bit undone over all the speculation that he might be going to New York in the offseason. This is what he had to say.
You've obviously been around the noise for so long. Is it bothering you more this year? Is it louder this year?
It's unnecessary. You got to do Ethan Strauss, who come in here and just give his whole opinion on stuff and make it seem like it's coming from me. And he just walk around here, don't talk to nobody, just walk in here and survey and then write something like that. And now y'all piling on me because I don't want to talk to y'all about that. I have nothing to do with the Knicks. I don't know who traded Porzingis. They got nothing to do with me. I'm trying to play basketball. Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches, you rile up the fans about it. Y'all let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man. Grow up. Come on, bro. I come here and go to work every day. I don't cause no problems. I play the right way. Well, I try to play the right way. I try to be the best player I can be every possession. What's the problem? What am I doing to y'all?
We're talking to the media.
So? Who are you? Why do I got to talk to you? Tell me. Is that going to help me do my job better? Nah, bro. I didn't feel like talking.
LeBron James all up in his feels as well. He took to Instagram to comment. Anthony Davis is liking things. It's all a mess, and it's all a mess because the NBA players have created a situation where the NBA on-court product is not as interesting as the NBA off-court product. So you can't get upset at fans and media for being more interested in free agency than they are the actual season when we all know how it's going to end. The Warriors are going to win the championship again. Unlike the Major League Baseball, NHL, or NFL playoffs, where anybody can theoretically win a championship, the Warriors are by far the best team. They are going to win a championship. So it's natural for fans and media to move on to the next question of where are the superstar players going to go, particularly when free agency has become such a prominent part of the story of Kevin Durant and LeBron James, the two best players in the NBA right now. But we will talk about all that with Chris Mannix coming up here shortly. In the meantime, Jemele Hill is being investigated, potentially, it sounds like, by the Secret Service for her tweet, which implied, at least partly, that Donald Trump should be assassinated. She has apologized for the tweet and deleted it. I want to get the opinions of the crew, and then I'm going to take your phone calls on this. 877-996-6369. A lot of people lined up and wanting to talk about it. Coop, what are your thoughts on Jemele Hill's tweet and the subsequent Secret Service investigation? My general perspective is, if the Secret Service is investigating one of your tweets because they think you might have threatened to assassinate the President of the United States or been rooting for it to happen, you probably did something you shouldn't have done. Is that a fair approximation of it?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, and most of the listeners know, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump by any means. But that's just stupid. Like, I mean, of all the jokes, there's so many other things that you could say to get your point across. Like, what's the joke there? Like,
the only punchline on the joke is that somebody's going to kill the president. right? I mean, that's the only possible punchline you could have when you use the phrase that Malcolm X, that was yelled out before Malcolm X got assassinated. Then the only punchline which people can fill in is, ha ha, Trump's going to get assassinated too. Like, I don't even understand the thought process. I mean, I think it's an attempt to make a joke. Maybe there's a joke angle here that I'm just not getting. I'm not an expert in Jemele Hill's joke thought processes. But if you have to deconstruct the joke to the point where you're like, oh, the assassination is the joke, like, probably not a good play, right?
That's a joke that you make to your friends that are sitting with you in the living room, not something that you put on Twitter.
And I don't even know that it's a joke you make to your friends sitting in the...
Well, if that's the thing that popped into her head and she thought, oh, like, this is funny. But then where? How did that go to, let me post this to my, you know...
million Twitter followers.
Yeah. What?
It's such a stupid thought to go with. And I think about this all the time because the line between what's going to be accepted as funny and what's not going to be accepted as funny is a fine one, right? Like, you don't, in this day and age, people get offended by things all the time. But I think assassination humor while the president is speaking, probably not a direction you want to go. What about you, Roberto? I mean, are you like, what's your thought when you see this?
Yeah, it's stupid. I totally agree with Coop, what he was saying. I'm not a big Trump fan either, but that's just something you don't do on social media. I mean, it's stupid. And like you say, what's the punchline? Like you say, the punchline is like, I guess, oh, what, someone's going to shoot Donald Trump? I mean, it's so stupid.
And also, to do the flip side, can you imagine if the same joke had been made? Like, if I, as a white guy, am sitting down and I decide I'm going to make a Barack Obama assassination joke, they would immediately have taken away my radio show.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't be allowed to be on television. I would be the most racist human being that's ever walked the planet if I made the joke. So she's a black woman and she makes the joke with the white guy as a punchline. And people are like, oh, well, I mean, a lot of people are defending her. Some people are defending her. I mean, not a lot of people, but some people. But if I made that same joke while Barack Obama was doing the State of the Union, I would lose my radio show. I would have lost my television show. I would be like a social media pariah. And the Secret Service would have shown up on my door 20 minutes after I sent that tweet. Dub, what do you think she could possibly have been thinking?
Well, I think what she was thinking is making that joke that implies assassinating the president. And in terms of jokes you should not tell when you have millions of Twitter followers, that may top the list.
Especially, it's not even a joke that it's while he was doing the State of the Union. So she's literally sitting watching the State of the Union and she decided to make an assassination joke. And again, I'm not the joke police. I don't ever think people should get fired for what they put on Twitter for like one individual tweet or one individual Facebook post, even if it's like really bad. Because my thought is we shouldn't ever judge somebody solely based on the worst thing they've put on social media. And a lot of people do that. So I'm not saying she needs to be fired.
Would you think differently if this was a comedian who did it and not Jemele Hill?
I would still think it was dumb.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
The comedian, like, I think where it's made matters to me on some level. Like, I will defend a comedian to the end of the earth if a comedian is on a stage in a comedy club and he makes a joke that seems insensitive later when, like, somebody in the comedy club records it and they put it out and people are like, oh, my God, I can't believe that comedian said this. Well, it's like their laboratory. Right. If you are a comedian and you're up on the stage, they're testing out humor. They're figuring out what
works. Totally agree.
To me, that is like that is their place to be able to test things. But it's different. Like when, what was it, Kathy Griffin or whatever, like held up the severed head of Donald Trump in a photograph. And I was like, well, when you're posing for a photograph, you have a lot of time to think. Maybe it's not a good idea to pose with the severed head of the president, no matter who the president is. Like, that seems like a little bit of an exaggerated move, you know? Like, so I would even, this is not as bad as that, right? Because when you're posing for a photo, you have a lot of time to think about what you're doing, and Twitter is very spur of the moment. But, and I think, what's the update?
Well, so I was looking at her Twitter account, and she sent this out about 13 hours ago. She said, so FYI, I literally have used get your hand out of my pocket a bunch of other times on Twitter, and always in a manner where you want to escape or distract from a situation, never in a way that was harmful or malicious. And she posted a screenshot.
I understand that, but I have said before, a tu Brute, right? Like, I have used that phrase. It's a famous phrase that was said when Julius Caesar was assassinated. The way that you use a phrase matters. Like, if I say to you right now, Coop, I'm going to kill you, like, people will be like, ha, 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 because I disagree with your opinion. If I had Donald Trump on the radio and I was interviewing him and I said, I'm going to kill you, that would be the same phrase, right? Like, so I don't necessarily buy into it. I saw that she had put out that tweet. Oh, I've used this phrase before. Well, yeah, so what? Like, the way that you use a phrase matters. Like, if I say to my wife, hey, want to F? That's different than me saying F you, right? Or, you know, like, the way that you use phrases matters. I'm going to kill you, Coop. Ha ha, you're an idiot for what you're saying about the Lakers is different than saying it while I've got the president or while the president is speaking, right? So I understand she's trying to make that distinction now. I don't think that's a good distinction to make.
Well, I think what it proves is that it's a phrase that she's used in different situations and then she's just using it again and was too, like, I don't know.
You're going to say stupid, and I think that's a fair yeah. position to make. Like, you can't say fair. That same. Again, if I said a tu brute and, like, I put a picture of myself, like, holding a knife alongside of a photo of Donald Trump, right? That would be different than if I said a tu brute and I'm performing in a play of Julius Caesar and I've just been killed, right? Like, the way that you use phrases matters, and if you don't understand that, then I think you failed one of the most basic and important parts of being a writer and someone who makes a living with your words, right? I just think that's bad. We got a lot of calls of people who want to weigh in. Did I get the opinion of Dub, or did we end up talking over Dub?
Let's get to these callers' opinions. We got about 10 callers lined up here that wanted to hop on.
All right, let's do it. Joel in Virginia, what you got for me? Solid start by the callers. Dub, what's shaking with the callers? Is our call screener not working again?
No, it's working. We got Rama in North Carolina.
All right, Joel started off with a big whiff. Rama in North Carolina, what's up?
Hi. I think it's about time people should be held accountable for their words. Just like Madonna, she wanted to blow up the White House. Nothing happened to her. Visit from Secret Service didn't do anything. So it's not Jemele Hill. It's time to hold people accountable. And not just, hide behind First Amendment. Yeah, and just like you pointed out, and if it was Barack Obama, she'd probably be in the slammer by now. And why is it a double standard? He's still the president. Elections are over. Get over it. Move on. You know, there's a process. Deal with it. Not, threatening everybody every day. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. And by the way, it's not just Jemele Hill who said stupid stuff like this. Johnny Depp said that maybe it was a time. Do you remember this quote, like, where Johnny Depp said maybe it's time for another actor to kill the president, like implying that John Wilkes Booth, who killed obviously Abraham Lincoln, that another actor, meaning himself or somebody else, needed to kill Trump? I mean, so there's been a lot of people who I think have this what's called Trump derangement syndrome, where they hate Trump so much that they end up being even more ridiculous than Trump, which is oftentimes even tough to pull off. But Trump's most hated critics are making him seem sane, which is ultimately playing into his benefit, which is the worst thing that I would imagine somebody like Jemele Hill or in the back in the day when he did this, I think it was last year, Johnny Depp would have liked. Daniel in Indiana. What's up, Daniel?
Yo, what's going on, Clay?
Living the dream, my man.
Man, I think y'all being a little too hard about this one, man. Let her have her social media and say what she wants, because he says what he wants and everybody in the world says what they want. Sticks and stones can break your bones, but what can words do to you? It's not like it was a threat from ISIS. She's already been fired from ESPN. She already lost her job, so why stop? If she doesn't like him, she don't like him.
You understand there's a difference between not liking somebody and tweeting out assassination jokes, right?
But she didn't say, I want to assassinate him. She was subliminal about what she said, and she said it out of a jokingly manner. Now, if everyone wants to take that so serious, why he says this and he says that, and then it's
Daniel, what do you think? What do you think? Hold on, Daniel. What do you think would have happened to me if I had jokingly said that Barack Obama should be assassinated during the State of the Union address?
I would have been, I would have been listening to your radio station, and I would have laughed and fell over, and I am a black man. So I would
I appreciate that. If your standard, I appreciate that. Thanks for the call. If your standard is the exact same, that's all I ask. Right? What I try to do on this show every single day is treat everybody the exact same, regardless of race, gender, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, anything else. I try to treat everybody the exact same. Now, you might say, I don't treat people that well. Or you might say, man, that guy Clay Travis, he can be a real a-hole sometimes. All those things can be accurate. But I try and treat everybody the exact same. That's the best that I can do. Eddie in Texas. What's up, Eddie? So if Daniel wants to treat everybody the exact same, I appreciate that. I respect it. Eddie, what's up?
Hey, good morning. Hey, just real quickly, I'm in the education business, and I try to teach kids besides the textbook every day. Before you open your mouth, make sure you can accept the responsibility after you spurt your words out there.
Yeah.
So when you everybody needs to know, whether it's a joke or social media, I don't care where it is, think about it before you make a comment. It's also the situation, and she's watching the speech. I mean, there's all kinds of factors that come into this place. She's, I mean, I've watched her before on television. I like her. She's okay. But she's highly educated, and she should know better than what she's doing.
Yeah.
And I do have an expression that I'm going to use now, and it comes after I heard her say this, and everybody's whatever. She knew what she was doing, and she chose to do it, so she now has to accept the responsibility again. That's all of us. When you choose to do something, be able to accept responsibility. It doesn't make any difference what I say, you say, the guy that just called, but you better, because you know what? I had a friend in the Secret Service, and you ought to see what them guys go through to protect the president.
Oh, I don't doubt it at all.
It's serious business. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know exactly.
I tell kids all the time, when you do stupid things with your mouth, I'm going to call you catfish. All mouth, no brains.
That's a good line. What I've always said, when I tell my kids now, even though they're young, freedom of speech doesn't mean you have freedom from consequence. It's an important lesson to learn. Also, I had to learn this with what I do. I talk for a living, 3 hours every morning, hour on television. I write. Sometimes you have to think, is the joke's payoff worth the joke? Right? When I'm sitting there with Twitter open and I'm thinking, oh, this will be a funny line, is the joke's payoff worth the risk of the joke? Because Twitter, I think Jim Rome said this a while back, Twitter's like a loaded handgun. When you go out there and you pop something off, you don't control where that goes and how people respond to it. Your intent is lost. Like I said earlier, you don't see sarcasm. There's no joke font. There's no sign for when somebody is being serious or when they're not being serious. Dan in Indiana. What's up, Dan?
Jemele Hill is basically a highly educated person who walked on a plane and yelled bomb with that. And that's the problem. And I'm a 33-year-old male who's a registered Republican who opposed Donald Trump in the primary, who opposed him on the general. But the problem is the media 90% leans the left way, so there's very little repercussions for things they say.
Yeah.
So I've actually been turned on more to Donald Trump and the party because of how the Covington Catholic kids were covered, how Kavanaugh was traveled. Those things have brought me back to more center or Republican because there is no consequence. Because 90% of people have the same beliefs that she has in media and especially sports media. There is no repercussions for what they do. And that to me is where, in this one, she gets her hand caught in the cookie jar because the 30 other times she tweeted about him, she says negative things and people, there's never a consequence because people tend to agree with her stance most of the time.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's why I say I try to treat like situations likely, right? And maybe that's the lawyer in me who has studied for years the importance of precedent. When you respond one way to a story, I want to ensure that I'm responding the same way so I'm not a hypocrite. I'll give you an example. When I worked on Capitol Hill when I was in college during the Bill Clinton impeachment trial, I did not believe Bill Clinton should be impeached for private sexual misconduct. I still believe that's the correct standard for the president. But I certainly don't believe that Donald Trump should then get impeached because of some relationship he might have had with a porn star a decade ago. Similarly, on the Brett Kavanaugh story, you've been paying attention to what's going on in Virginia right now? You had the guy in blackface who's the governor. You had the lieutenant governor who comes out and may have been guilty of sexual assault. At least it's been alleged. And then you got the attorney general who also did blackface. I mean, all three of the dudes at the top of Virginia right now, the white guys and the black guys, are all falling apart. But when it comes to that lieutenant governor's allegation, my standard is the same as it was on Kavanaugh. Just because one woman says that she was sexually assaulted or treated inappropriately without corroborating evidence doesn't mean you have to believe it. And that's the lawyer in me. So my standard is the same for Kavanaugh as it would be for a lieutenant governor of Virginia. The race doesn't matter. The party doesn't matter. You got to treat people the same. So I try to do. Bryce in Roanoke, you're in Virginia, in the center part
hey,
of that
brother.
Insanity, right?
I just wanted to say, man, like, at the end of the day, I was always taught that there is some truth in jest, you know?
Yeah.
And Jemele Hill can go out and say or backtrack her way into saying that this was a joke. But like the previous caller said, the Supreme Court already ruled 100 years ago, you know, you cannot use your words to incite violence and to incite a riot. And it's just one of these things that you're sitting here going, you know, what in the hell were you thinking, lady? And it's just a shame. It's an absolute shame. And the problem is that if, at the end of the day, if Trump keeled over today, she would cheer it. You know, most of these people would cheer it. The problem that I have is that all of these little wink and nod jokes that they make, to me, is just them saying, I really do wish something would happen to this man, but I'm just too, I'm not enough of a person to do it myself. So I just kind of wish I could toss it into the ether and maybe some, you know, maybe something will happen and then we can just joke about it later.
Yeah, so. I think that's the problem is she's got a history of not liking Trump. So when you put out an implication of an assassination, it's like, well, we clearly know you don't like the president. So we're not assuming that this is a joke standing alone. Donnie in Richmond. What's up, Donnie?
Hey, Clay, welcome to Richmond, Virginia, where we're in a constant state of denial about our politics. I believe my kindergarten principal is up next to be the governor. So, yeah.
It might be you,
we're
Donnie. I don't know how far down the list they're going to go. Might be you the next governor.
Lord, I hope not. We'd all be in trouble. But in all honesty, Jemele Hill, you opened your mouth again and stuck your foot in it. It wasn't funny. It wasn't cute. And I'd like to know when somebody's going to look at this for what it is. It's a racist issue against the president is what it is. If this was said about Obama, you'd have been in handcuffs, Clay, and I wouldn't be listening to the show today.
I think there's some truth to that. Let me a couple more quickly. Al in New Mexico, what's up?
Hey, I think everybody's taking this totally the wrong way. I think Jemele put is just striving to get the nomination for the Kathy Griffin Idiot 2019 Idiot Award. I'm out.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Robert in Kentucky, what's up, Robert?
Hey, you've had a couple callers on there covered pretty much everything I needed to say, but I think, you know, if I'd wrote a letter to the president threatening his life, even though it would just have been my eyes and someone else's eyes that would have seen the letter, I would have been in jail the next day.
Yeah.
I think she deserves about 30 days in jail.
Oh, that would be wild.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.